Yes, guys, welcome back to another episode of Teams Like Brighton. And guys, let's calm down, okay? All right, a lot has happened. Okay, we're all really annoyed, particularly in the last 5 minutes. But guys, we still are a point ahead of Spurs and Villa, regardless of what happens in our next game in hand against Man City. The important one is Southampton at home, and then the big six-pointer against Villa. We all knew Richie, he was always going to come down to the match, last game of the season at Villa Park, didn't we?
I hope they get it done sooner. I still hope they can, but yes, hopefully results go Brighton's way and Brighton beat Southampton this weekend, and then it will be wrapped up before, so it won't need to be have any of those nail-biting things. But yes, just let's get it over and done with. Let's talk about the Newcastle game. So obviously 4-1 defeat at St. James's Park. A real thump back down to earth once again. I feel like I'm saying that a number of times. After a crazy late win against Manchester United, then absolutely nuts 5-1 defeat to Everton. Beat Arsenal 3-0 at Emirates. Lose 4-1 to Newcastle again. So hopefully that means we're due for, finishing off the sort of W maybe. Hopefully that means a hefty win over Southampton at the weekend. But yes, I think the problem for me with this one, I guess just in the lead up to the game, I was thinking, I was chatting with some of the journalists going, oh, who's going to play? Who's not going to play? He is probably going to rotate, but to what extent? And obviously 4 changes were made. Van Hek came in for only his second Premier League start of the season. And there was no McAllister, no Ferguson, no Nciso, and Welbeck, Undav and Buonanotte came in. And I think pretty early on it was clear that Newcastle was so up for it. They were just ferocious in the way that they started. I can't, correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, I can't remember a first half where Brighton have been so on the back foot. It was just sort of a snarling, rampaging performance from Newcastle with just too much pace and power. They just couldn't handle it. But also what didn't help is that there were sort of shades of the Forest and Everton game where they just was not, they weren't up to their usual precise ways, and there was sloppiness and lots of passes going astray, and even corners personified Jason Steele was making some uncharacteristic sort of errant passing. So it just, it felt ominous early on. Unfortunately, Undav, who had a bit of a mixed performance, he headed into his own net from a really good Trippier set piece. He's really, really lethal with those crosses and corners. So fair play to him. Obviously, then former Brighton player Dan Burn scores just before halftime, and I thought that was it. I thought that's game over. If Brighton could hold on, that'd be fine. Again, Undav gives away a needless foul. And then Trippier whips one in and they score. Much better in the second half. And then lovely through ball from Gilmore to Undav, who does look like he's really coming into some form, which is great to see, better late than never. 4 goals in his last 5 games. So, yeah, really happy for him. But, yes. And then it looked like Brighton were definitely getting better and Newcastle were nervous. The fans were. But I didn't really feel that Brighton created any big clear-cut chances that really put them under pressure. It was sort of a lot of the ball, but not doing that much with it. And then 2, late sucker punches. Brighton sort of caught napping, went to sleep. Van Hek tried to beat the offside trap with Wilson, failed to do so. Wilson tucked it home. And then Wilson gets away again, sets up Bruno to make it 4-1. I think the final score was harsh. I think main takeaways are Newcastle are a very good team. Brighton are just quite weary when they don't have a break. Injuries are not helping, but it's not doom and gloom. Brighton still have it in their hands for Southampton. What about you, Tom?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think the key thing is here is that Newcastle were so up for this match. I think everything went their way, really, when you look at it. Their form was better. They've got better players in terms of depth and availability. We're ridden with injuries at the moment in really crucial areas of the pitch. The fans were just up for it from the word go. And like any pass, any tackle that they made, they just roared. So it in that sense, the fans' role mirrored what happened over at Forest. Once the fans are there, it's going to be, we have to do something special to keep them quiet. And with, like you say, like there was this energy about them that was kind of similar to the Everton match rather than the Arsenal match. And it would have been nice to actually really push on from this, but it just seemed like it was a performance of like damage control, really, where they're making the gamble and hopefully we're going to see a much bigger and better performance against Southampton, because that's, I think a lot of people have emphasized how important that game is. That's our penultimate home match of the season. Then we face City before a trip a few days later to Villa Park. Van Hek definitely seemed like as if he had to be thrown right in the deep end there. Look, Newcastle Champions League quality, we can see it right there, and they deserve to be where they are right now. And that match probably more or less sorted their chances for Champions League football next season. So, you know, fair play to them. We wanted European football, but they wanted Champions League football more. So it will be interesting to see how they get on next season. But really, at the end of the day, in those 90 minutes, you could tell from the subs as well, what we put on were our first team players. Apart from Ufia, there was everyone else was a first teamer, but no one else in there offered that serious depth that can actually change the game. And I love Dundav. I'm so happy the fact that he's getting his goal scoring touch in, and he seems to be really stuck into the side. It's just a bit frustrating for him. And he actually said after the match that he felt responsible for the result. He's apologised to the fans, to the players. Personally, I don't see fault in him directly. I think it was very much an overall team performance. It wasn't like as if it was just, you know, what he did was the deciding factor. It wasn't. You know, his own goal was harsh. He was in a position where he had to go in there. Personally, I blame the fact that there wasn't anyone at the back post, because if you've got Kieran Trippier coming in with a flat in swinging corner, why on earth isn't there anyone on the posts? For me, that's defending 101. So that's I don't blame Undav for jumping up and challenging for the ball. That's fine. The foul was City, yes, but you know, I think he made amends for that with a really well taken goal. There's plenty of things there where I can't say Undav's at fault, Van Hek's at fault. There seems to be a little bit of a meltdown on Twitter. And like I said at the start, let's all calm down, because...
Really? A meltdown on Twitter? Who would have thought it?
Who would have thought it, ladies and gentlemen? We're in the position where we are, and we've just got to try and, you know, support the lads. I think if we can get this win at Southampton and get a result still up against Villa, regardless of what happens against City, then happy days. Personally, I would love to think that, you know, City drop points against us. And if they do, then I think that's really us quids in if we beat Southampton. But the other thing is as well, is like, you know, they've just been relegated now and they're just going to do a bit of window shopping to try and get themselves either new contracts to state their claim to stay in the side or to just, you know, find another club. So it's going to be interesting to see how that team lines up and how they play at the weekend. Personally, I hope they just continue how they have been throughout most of the season, which has just been god awful. But we'll wait and see, because you know, it's been an interesting few weeks as a Brighton fan.
For sure. One thing that I just want to add, and hopefully I'm not jinxing anything, but I've just had a look at the fixtures for this weekend.
Oh god.
So Tottenham versus Brentford. That could go either way.
Yep.
Obviously, Tony's all without Ivan Tony because of the betting scandal. He's banned for 8 months, I think. So
Sorry, can I just also point out there that his goal was one of, was the big difference from us getting a point at with Brentford at home instead of three. So his goal made sure that we dropped 2 points there. And this was during the investigation. Why wasn't he primarily suspended at this point when quite clearly it shows that he's been overwhelmingly against it, and he shows no signs of appealing it either. So why wasn't he primarily provisionally suspended for these matches? Which really frustrates me. It to me, that's really annoying, because that kind of thing, I can understand why fans get annoyed. Yes, we have plenty of opportunities on the pitch to kind of cancel and nullify that out. It's just something silly, and you do get people in those tin hats who have a very decent case at the moment to kind of like say, oh, look, Spurs are going to benefit from this, but not us. That's my little side rant.
It's fair. I mean, Brighton can have plenty of gripes this season in terms of VAR decisions, goals going against them, decisions, Tottenham loss, Brentford thing, whatever. Yes, completely agree. Hopefully, as I said, that won't, when the season is said and done, hopefully Brighton will be in sixth and we can go, ha ha, wasn't that fun? Oh, God, how we were scared. But yes, so just in terms of the fixtures. So obviously Tottenham, Brentford, you maybe fancy Tottenham to win that, but they've not been that convincing. Brentford are a very, very good team. They could cause an upset, or maybe not even an upset. They could just win there. The one that I think is the key one, though, Liverpool host Aston Villa. That is big, because if Liverpool win and Brighton win, then that's it. Brighton have Europe. That's it. Unless Man U, FA Cup? I'm not sure. But yeah, the point is that...
Fine.
Cool, okay, we're good. I think I wrote a piece on that a while ago. I was like, no, that's right. Good. Yes, so that's it. So that's all eyes on this weekend. But yes, just in terms of going back to the Newcastle game, I'm not going to obviously dig players out. I just thought personally some players weren't as good as they usually are. I thought Caicedo struggled against Isaac as a right back after doing very well against Rashford, Martinelli and Trossard in recent weeks. I don't think he got much better in midfield. He was pretty sloppy. But these guys are having to play, Saturday, Wednesday. They really are, mounting up. And McAllister's, I thought he was pretty much of the same build as Gross, as in just keeps on chugging away. But even he was rested. So that shows that, the fixtures really are sort of taking a toll. For me, Undav, it's really good to see that he is showing his clinical edge. He was lethal for Union SG last season. I think it's 27 goals in all competitions. But it looks like he really is finding that sort of, finding his feet and really, putting chances away now, which is great to see. I thought his all-round game still needs work, just in terms of holding the ball up, laying it off to each other, others, in some of his decision-making, but definite improvement. For me, Buonanotte still looks a bit raw. I don't know. I don't think playing on the right is really working. I don't, other than against Manchester United, where I thought he was decent, I think he's... It's been difficult for him, but I don't blame him at all, because he's 18. He's come to arguably the toughest league in the world. He's thrown in at the deep end. I don't think he's playing his best position. I think he can play on the left to right, but his best, I think, is sort of an attacking midfielder. And this is such a high pressure, high octane, scenario. I don't really blame him. I wonder next season what the plan will be for him. Maybe a loan could be good somewhere in Europe, or maybe even in the Championship. I'm not even sure. But and then finally, I thought Van Hek was a bit mixed, in the sense that he made some really good crunching tackles, won some 50-50s, was able to quite often sort of find these nice threaded balls through the lines, but he was turned over a couple of times, caught in possession. He seemed like he was bullied a little bit aerially, which is no shame when you've got 6 foot seven Dan Burn, 6 foot five Sven Botman. But I just feel that he there's sort of levels, and I don't think he's at the level of a Dunk, a Webster, a Colwell. I think he's a step down. I don't think he's enough of a ball playing centre back to really shine in De Zerbi's system. There's just times when, even though he sort of has the ball, his pass maybe isn't accurate enough, so then it puts someone else in under pressure and that has a knock on effect. And I do think that he could be a Premier League defender. I just don't think he is quite at the level for a team. I'm going to put this in a different way. A fantastic team who are on the cusp potentially of Europe, a team that many teams want to be like Brighton, but aren't like Brighton. See what I did there. So I feel that he could be in a side potentially top Championship, maybe lower end Premier League, maybe like a promoted team, he could be a decent side. But I just feel, for the way that Brighton want to play and the options Brighton have, he's not quite good enough for that. But if Cole doesn't stay, maybe he might be a good option to keep. He is out of contract this summer. There might be an option in his contract to extend it for the year. He has previously said that, you know, he will be sort of glued to his phone this summer. He doesn't want another loan. So he might be off potentially if he doesn't get that regular football. What's your take on those points, I guess?
Yeah, I think the main one for me is the Van Hecke one that kind of stands out. You know, he was superb at Blackburn Rovers last season. He was really promising. He showed promising signs yesterday. And I think it's really important to point out that this guy had next to no match fitness this season, really. And he's been
two Premier League starts.
Exactly. And what? And an FA Cup appearance as well in that mix.
I think he's had 10 games in all competitions. Most of those have come in the FA Cup and Carabao Cup. And I think, just really quickly, Bunda has been given a run of games and he's been allowed to shine. Van Hecke has not had that opportunity. So it's difficult for him.
It is. And like you say, he's shown those promising signs, like showing good signs about being a ball-playing defender and kind of fitting in the style of play, making those passes that De Zerbi wants the players at the back want to play. But like you say, there were times that he was bullied in the air. He was bullied against some experienced players in the box. Callum Wilson was hungry for the ball. I think it was one time as well, he just struggled to read Isaac as two. For me, when you're in that position where you're that young and you're just trying to make yourself, you know, worthy of being in the squad, you just got to be able to say, right, okay, move on now. Just got to turn a new leaf, learn from it, and then just make sure it just doesn't happen again. Because if you make the same mistake twice in the Premier League, you know, you're not going to be forgiven for it. It's just such an unforgivable league for so many professional footballers, where you do see them get dumped to, well, teams lower down the pecking order or to a division lower or even abroad. And they really don't recover to reach that same height again. So it would be a shame, because I do think Van Hecke is a quality player. But like you say, I've defended Undav and I say, give him a run of game, see what happens. And look what's happened. You know, he's finding those goals and he's getting a good return there, which is promising to see. So, you know, like I say with Van Hecke, new leaf next season, work again in the summer, and then let's see what happens. Because, you know, like you say, there is a good chance, permutations pending, that we could actually get Europe this weekend, which would be bonkers. So, you know, I think many Brighton fans are going to be Liverpool fans at the same time. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. But, you know, there's still so much to play for and so much really that needs to be addressed in the squad. Buonanotte, yeah, I agree. I think he's very... every time I see him, he doesn't hug that touchline in the same way that Solly March does. And I just get this feeling that he's not a winger. He's very much someone that's an attacking-minded midfielder. He's someone that wants to play central and cause that little bit of chaos, draw players out of position, and then play that ball that creates that chance or, you know, opens up a goal-scoring opportunity for him. I think that's what he is. Whereas March, who we've missed massively, is someone that really attacks the wings and tries to run behind the defence and just produce those opportunities down that goal line that has worked wonders for us under De Zerbi. Buonanotte hasn't really brought that in. He's offered something different, but I don't even think he knows exactly what to do with it because he's 18. He's raw talent. He's not cooked yet. He's not understanding what he needs to do. Like I said, if anyone who's 18 years old and is able to do that quickly in the Premier League of all places, you know, you're going to go far in life. So, you know, he showed so many promising signs as well, I think, in his time at the Albion. And like you say, he's been thrown in the deep end because we really needed, we needed players because we haven't got the depth in there. So again, I'm not too disheartened with the Newcastle match. I think the fourth goal was ridiculous to concede. Personally, that is my only criticism from the squad, really, where I just think that's inexcusable in my book. Whereas all the others, it's just like we've just got to work and improve on it. De Zerbi even said after the match, you know, we deserve to lose. Fair play to Newcastle, you know, and I'll say fair play because really, Newcastle fans wanted it the most. St. James's Park is a fortress anyway. So, yeah. You know, when the fans are up for it, you know, they let you know and it's next to impossible anyway. I mean, I only heard the cheer of the Brighton fans up at the top. And I know there wasn't that many, but, you know, for those who went, fair play to you guys on the Thursday 1, night.
1,000 of you. Well done.
Yep. So, you know, that's a lot. But to be fair, that's a lot of people going up there, committing themselves to a ridiculous commute there and back to watch 90 minutes. And the scoreline does flatter Newcastle, I do think, as well. I don't think it really showed what we were capable of. But, you know, we just seem to concede the moment that third goal went in for Newcastle. So we move, as people say. We move and bring on Southampton.
Yes, one little footnote to add. Congrats to Cam Perpignan, who made his Premier League debut, the young Australian. There's a yeah, really nice...
He got his boot.
Yes. On debut. He got his... there was a lovely little video floating around on social media of his family cheering.
Saw that. You
know, tens of thousands of miles away. Cheering on their son. So, yeah, congrats to him. Obviously not the result he would have wanted, but a very proud moment for him. On a slight side note, Tom, ahead of, obviously, the Southampton game, I saw comments from, this is Manchester United, Gary Neville, and he, in his podcast after the Arsenal game, said something interesting about Southampton's relegation and if that was a cautionary tale for Brighton. Just a little bit of context. I know this is this might trigger you.
I forgot just about really this.
So obviously, I think I'd say casual observers would say that Brighton are now the new Southampton because Southampton were held up as sort of the beacon of sustainable outfit, punched above their weight, made some very good signings, qualified for Europe. But it's, you know, and that was only in 2016, I think, the last time they were in, within Europe. So that's only 7 or so years ago. But obviously they've been relegated to the Championship. And I will read you his comments and you can respond. So he said, Southampton cleared a lot out last summer, tried to reset the club's philosophy, but they had a very good philosophy. That's not to say they won't come back. And then on a day like this, on Sunday, after obviously Brighton beat Arsenal, he said, I don't want to I don't want to send a little warning sign to Brighton, but Southampton were the beacon that everyone looked at for a number of years. When they can recruit players, sell them, replace them, still finish in decent positions, Brighton will be aware of that, and I don't want to deflate Brighton's day. But there is that warning sign that these types of clubs can get themselves into this position. So, Tom, thoughts? Is that lazy. Just a lazy thing?
Such a lazy thing to say, because all he's focused on is what we've achieved on the pitch. And he hasn't really looked into the structure of what the Albion have offered. You look at the owners. Well, they've had a takeover since then. And that's what's happened. Tony Bloom's not going to sell this club at all. He's got this place running a tight ship. He's got zero interest in reclaiming the amount of money that he's pummeled in with interest-free loans. He's bankrolled the training centre. He's used data to really formulate the scouting network. And I know Rafa van der Vaart loves people that talks about football data. I just don't see the similarities. Yes, we've had a few good players come through the ranks, same as Southampton has, but our scouting network's superior. Our facilities are superior. We've got an owner who is thinking of every single variable and possible outcome going. And he's got plans A, B, C, D, E, F, G lined up already. So we know exactly what's going to happen next. Let's not forget Southampton were really bankrolling on Pochettino being there for the best part of, what, 6-7 years? Didn't happen, did it?
I will say Koeman was the one who got them into, I think, Europe twice.
Yeah, Ronald Koeman was the main guy, but Poch was the one that they really hoped for. Obviously, they did have a solid plan B in Koeman, who done wonders for them. Then he packed up to Everton, and then they were kind of like, well, now what? But yeah, we've seen the development that we've had with Graham Potter leaving. You know, how quick and how easy a fitting De Zerbi was. And Barber said, you know, we've got this facility in place for when these situations happen. And you don't seem to be like, oh yeah, this is all board talk. No, you actually get a sense of, no, they actually have like a file there for when De Zerbi probably leaves, whenever, and then who we need to go for next. So I'm not worried about us being the next Southampton in 5-6 years time when we go down. We might go down, you know what? And that, do you know what? That's absolutely fine, because, you know, the law of averages does dictate that three teams go down every season. You know, we might find ourselves in a bit of a sticky situation whereby we have a mass exodus maybe of players, and, you know, injuries don't go our way and results don't go our way. Who knows? We could be like in the situation that West Ham are in. European final and relegation dogfight. Fantastic. I'm all for it, because that way is a little bit more exciting than mid-table mediocrity. I'm happy with that. But there's so many, you know, variables to say why Gary Neville was wrong. And it's just, even for him, who has spoken a lot in depth about the infrastructure that the Albion has in place, and yet he seems to completely disregard that by saying, you know, that, you know, what's happened in Southampton should be a warning to Tony Bloom and the Albion. It's just lazy.
Yeah, I think also with Southampton, I think the point you raised there of the many were good, but Tony Bloom, for me, that's the key. He is the constant. He is the godfather. You know, he's the one who's running the show beautifully. And I think the problem with Southampton, and I mean, if we get any Saints listeners, they might come in and say, oh, you got that wrong. But I believe in 2017, so not too long after they got into Europe, I think they were in Europe the 2016-2017 season. They were taken over by the Chinese businessman Gao or Zhao or something like that. Apologies if I'm getting that wrong, pronunciation-wise. But he took over the club, and I think then things really got stale, and that sort of led to a decline. So that was a big part of it. So the similarity ends there. You've got a guy who's looking to make maybe some money from the club rather than put in the interest of the club first. Whereas Tony Bloom is unbelievably selfless in that regard, because he's pumped in hundreds of millions. And like you say, he's just going to go, yep, that I'll never see that money again, but I love this club. So, yeah, for me, the main one is Tony Bloom. And then I do think that probably Brighton have just taken the sort of, you know, analytical, clever approach to the next level. I do think that just for, like you say, the Europe thing, that could be a, you know, an issue if they get there, just in terms of the squad depth. Potentially, you know, if you just keep on selling your best players, the bar has to get higher in terms of how you can respond. So that's another challenge in itself. But I just do feel that, yeah, it's just like, it's, there's just, you can poke too many holes in that, you know, there's the perforated sheet. You can just, there's just too many holes that appear. But yes, let's move on. So Tom, finally, let's wrap up. So how do you see the game going against an already relegated Brighton? Sorry, horrible. So it's darn Gary Neville's rubbing off on me. How do you see the game against already relegated Southampton going at the Amex on Sunday?
Look, I kind of touched this earlier in the episode anyway, but this is a game that we really just have to make sure that Southampton have absolutely zero momentum going into this. They have absolutely nothing to play for now. And it's just now just a case of, okay, we've got nothing to lose now. So they're in they've already won the mental battle because, well, we know what's going to happen next to us. We're going to get the massive pay cut. We'll probably get on the transfer list or we'll get released. But, you know, we're here to impress our future employer or kind of stake a case of saying, no, I want to stay in this club. I want to stay in the team. This is my worth to you, to the gaffer. So we really need to go ahead on this. And I really want to thank the guy on North Stand chat who said that in the last 10 years that Brighton and Southampton have met, the home team has never won. The last time a home team won in this fixture was back in January 2012. When we won 3-0. So, you know, that there's...
would you?
It's due to break. Records like that are made to break for whatever reason. But, you know, that stat is staggering. I think it was something like 10, 11 meetings in that time. And, you know, we...
A lot of draws.
Lot of draws, lot of defeats. Well, a lot of away wins. Look, we need this win. I think if we could get this win, like you say, like, and pray that Liverpool get their win, you know, we're quids in. We're going to be getting ready to pack our suitcases and look forward to a European tour, regardless of what competition that is. So we reached the goal. We need this win, and I think that's something the Zerbi's going to need to know. I think that's something the message has to be sent loud and clear to the fans, because we want this. We want Europe. And I think that's something that we really need to push on for. And, you know, if De Zerbi or someone like that can just really say, no, we're going to do this. This means more. We need the fans behind us and can get the atmosphere going. You know, we could really be talking about a much happier podcast episode on Monday morning, Richie, which would be marvellous.
Yes. So what's your... Actually, I'll give my quick thoughts. But yeah, just on that note, I think De Zerbi talked about the fact that he had to rotate against Newcastle because Welbeck, Bonanotta, Gilmar are the same as McCarthy. They can't play 90 minutes today and 90 minutes on Sunday. But he did say, I think on Sunday, we will be with energy and in the best condition. This is a game that Brighton have to win for me. This is just the perfect time, the perfect opposition for me to bounce back. I know you talked about sort of players, you know, wanting to state their claim. But for me, like, I think there'll be a mass exodus at Southampton. I think so many of those players will want to play in either Premier League or top league elsewhere. I don't think many of them will want to do a dogfight in the Championship. Maybe
I want James Ward-Prowse. Get him in that midfield.
He might have to take a bit of a pay cut because I think he's on hefty wages. But I feel in terms of the players who might have a point to prove will probably be the younger players, the players who have been on the fringes this year, maybe the under 21s, because I think Southampton's B team just got promoted back to Premier League 2. So I think this is a game that those players might be hungry. I mean, they might be playing for a bit of pride, but I just feel that if Brighton can show the energy that they showed at Arsenal or Manchester United or Wolves, I think they will walk this. I think this will be a very comfortable win. I think they need to start well, and then hopefully that confidence will flood through. I think he'll probably go for a pretty strong side. I think, you know, Ferguson will be back. McAllister will be back. And Nciso will be back. Colwell will be back. And yes, I think this will be a comfortable one. So I'm going for a 3-1 win.
Ooh, gone for a 4-goal thriller. I think it's going to be a bit more conservative than that. I'm going to go with a 2-0 win.
Sounds good. Well, I think that's... Should we wrap up there? There's no other pressing concerns you want to cash?
No, I think we'll be waffling on in that case. But look, guys, thank you so much for listening to this as ever. Be sure to like and subscribe on YouTube, or be sure to follow and give us a great review on the podcast platforms wherever you're listening to. Enjoy the weekend. And as always, guys, up the Albion. And here's to 3 points at the weekend. Come on, the Albion.
We move!